Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk, and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7pm here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Good afternoon, you are listening to Sheffield Live. This is the film show and we're on 93.2 FM and on digital. I'm Martin.
I'm Denise.
Hi, I'm Shelley.
And I'm Sheldon.
A lot of mics to.
I know, it's a lot of mics, there's a lot of people in
here. Yeah.
Rammed,
as they say. Okay, well, we're having a packed show, quite literally, with content and people in the studio this week. And what are we going to start off with?
Well, we've done a schedule. I don't suppose we'll stick to it, but.
Well, you don't.
Not usually.
I'll just do one more review.
Well, I will do that.
Yeah, I know.
Well, in the news this week, in the film news, in the movie world, Daniel Day-Lewis has announced a return to acting. He retired. Retired? 2018?
Yes, he retired.
Phantom Thread was his last film.
Yeah.
No more. What could have pulled him out of retirement, Martin? But maybe a project with his son.
surprise.
That he had co-written. I can't explain to you how not bothered I am at all about all this.
I mean, he's been doing the method on it all his life, or all his son's life, because it is a father-son film.
Yeah.
So you're not particularly excited by this,
I'm not.
I see.
The title is Anemone, which is a technical word for a wildflower. So I don't know how that actually matters to the story, but it's a story, you say, of father-son relationships, starring a father and son, written by a father and son, and hopefully it'll just be them two that go and see it, because I'm sure it could be incredibly tedious.
Started
it's Sean Bean's, isn't it?
Sean Bourne.
Sean Bourne.
Sean Bourne or Sheen Bean.
Sheen Bean.
Yeah.
And Samantha Moulton, and it's currently filming in Manchester. Just in time for the Oasis revival.
Okay, well, that news hasn't excited Martin, so moving swiftly on.
Hang on.
Oh, the bell. Oh,
ready?
We're doing the bell for an inanimate object.
Yeah.
Oh, go on then.
Well, it's go on. Sort of, yeah. It will be an inanimate
yeah,
object.
Yeah, you're an inanimate object. In Bruges.
It's like this every week.
Oh, bit of a flat bell. Oh. Well, the news this week, Total Film has published its last issue in print. Total Film, I'm not sure how long it's been going on, but it's kind of a middle of the... It's a Hollywood-type films. You've got your Empire for your bit of both, your Sight and Sound for your arty cinema, and Total Film is more of your... Well, if there's a new Marvel film,
that.
That's... Yeah.
Over time, it's become more broad.
Mm.
It was more... sort of standard Hollywood fare,
yeah.
But over time it's... Because my mum used to buy me a subscription to it, so... But it's been going about 20 years.
Yeah.
Something like
longer.
That. Yeah.
But does this mark a sort of... I mean, if that's failing, that'd be the first one to go. Have they been holding on for a while?
I think they probably have. Mm. So, I mean, we are pretty much down to what? Sight and Sound and Empire.
Yeah.
What about Hot Dog? You remember Hot Dog?
I remember Hot Dog.
Oh, I remember.
And there was
Hot
a couple
Dog, yes.
of other sort of. You see these occasional ones, which are like science fiction specials, Star Wars specials,
right.
And they sort of come and go.
There was Film Review as well. That
yeah.
lasted a long time,
yeah.
in various guises.
Yeah.
But that's been.
I mean,
at least a decade since.
My favourite always used to be Film Comment.
Yes,
which was
oh,
America,
I used to
and that
film
was
Comment.
A great magazine.
Absolutely,
also.
And that COVID killed that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still managed to get my hands on Cineast,
yep.
but that's quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
There's only probably about two or three shops in this country where you can
yep.
pick it up. But that's a great, that is great long form articles and its reviews. Certainly are not exhaustive, but they're very selective and they pick up on some of the big films. I would mean that they've got to get big critical success.
Is it a bit more thoughtful as well?
Yeah, I like that. So you're left with either Sight and Sound and Empire now. I must admit,
Little White Lies as well, but I find their reviews a little bit up and down.
Yeah, it's a bit matey, Little White Lies.
Yeah. And there was a film, a magazine I used to love in the 90s called Neon, which was out very briefly, but it was a good mix of arty
yeah.
and mainstream.
And they used to have some really good interviews
in
that. Mm. But that's it.
So if Total Film is knocking off, are we holding out hope for our... I mean, my Sight and Sound landed on the doormat this morning with Steve McQueen on the cover.
Yeah, I gave up with that last year.
Oh, I'm still hanging on in there.
No, I mean, a lot of it was...
Although
the colour of the pages and the colour of the... I can't read
any
of this.
Can't read it anymore.
I cannot understand. They had the perfect review format of the reviews were just in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
They're not now.
No, they're not.
I don't know where I am.
What?
What's wrong with the alphabet, guys?
Yeah.
Was that so difficult?
I know. Well, who makes these decisions?
Anyway, at least if you're in Sheffield, you've still got the film show. Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and on digital.
Oh, yeah. Always. Oh, uber professional.
Right then.
The bell.
John Ashton.
Yes.
A name that might not be familiar to you all, but...
Well, the thing I remember him most for, apart from Beverly Hills Cop, is Midnight Run
yes.
with Robert De Niro.
Marvin Dorfler was the actor?
Marvin Dorfler was
the character,
he was constantly at loggerheads with Robert De Niro.
He pretty much stole the show from Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin, didn't he? Yeah.
Which is difficult.
Yes.
But yes, I can't remember. How old was he?
Hang on,
it's at my fingers.
I'd forgotten, I'd read it the other day.
He died at the age of 76.
76. Yeah, so
that's quite young for what has been going recently.
Yeah.
Well, he had a cancer.
Yeah,
okay.
And he did look very ill towards the end.
In Beverly Hills Cop 4, he had a desk job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was lovely that they put him in.
Yeah.
Because that's what my generation probably remember him most for is the cop in Beverly Hills Cop.
But a sad end there. But yeah. And you'll probably see him turn up in everything from every other cop show that's ever been on, and the Angela Lansbury Murder.
He pops up in Murder, She Wrote.
Everybody is in Murder, She Wrote.
In it.
Everyone. Adam Driver is probably
no,
in
he's
one.
Not.
No, he's not. No. And this is a sad one.
Yeah.
I'm leaving this one to you, Phil.
John Amos. Are we doing?
John Amos?
No, John Amos is the... Although he did actually
did somebody put
die...
It on my
It was on there.
Oh, hang on.
Has it gone again?
Live. So John Amos is the actor who they announced his death this week.
Yes,
actually
I did
died
see
in August.
Who played the older version of Kunta Kinte?
Yes. Roots.
But he was another one who popped up in so many things.
Yeah, he was a sort of megastar of American TV, wasn't he?
And he was in the first Black American sitcom, all Black American sitcom, Good Times. I don't know if you've ever come across it. Predates stuff like The Cosby Show and what have you, but I always remember him in a really small part in Vanishing Point.
Oh, God, yeah.
With
the
Super Soul, where he's fighting off a load of right-wing rednecks who are trying to get into the studio. It was only announced the other day, but apparently he died in August.
Oh, God. Yeah. I apologise missing that, but...
I'm sure it was on there.
It was. Well, what happened, Shelley, is I sent a schedule and Martin ignored it. And then sent his own.
The last schedule I got was from Shelley. Can we just stop
Save
this?
It for the affair.
Well, we need the bell again.
Sheldon hasn't come into this yet either.
He will.
The next part's all about Sheldon. Not this part. This is about someone else.
I'm just here to referee.
The sin bin for a few people, I think.
Okay.
Go on.
I guess the biggest name for the bell this week is the wonderful Kris Kristofferson. Star of many a great film. Worked with Sam Peckinpah a lot in his early days. He's got a small role in Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. Then a bigger role in Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid.
And then Convoy.
That
was it, wasn't it?
It was Convoy. Yeah, it was in three.
And of course, A Star is Born with Ms. Barbara Windsor.
Yeah, yes. Denise had to get that.
Barbara Windsor.
I guess more recently became more well-known as when he was much older in... Blade movies as Whistler. And of course, this career in country music.
Yeah, and the other big film for him...
Heaven's Gate, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed.
I mean, great actor, great presence, wonderful voice, and very much an anti-establishment rebel, which is something I like.
I just loved his face as well. He grew into a really good face for character acting.
So, and
he'd been a helicopter pilot, hadn't he?
He had a master's in English literature from Oxford, which I didn't know about.
Which, that big scene in Heaven's Gate, which they went back and filmed in Oxford, he must have met all his old mates when he was over there doing that.
Yeah, it's incredible. He had an amazing life.
So
that, I mean, very sad news, but he was a good age.
And as you say, as a musician... Star is Born. He managed to get one song in, did he, in A Star is Born?
Couple.
Help Me Make It Through the Night, is that in Star is Born? Or is that in
it's used as thematic material for Fat City.
Fat City, yes. of course it is. Another cracking film, So, I mean, he wrote lots of songs for other people as well, and quite often he would write them, sort of perform them a little bit, and then say, no, you can have that.
A bit like Bob Dylan in a way there, when you think of all the people who have had hits by Dylan, you know, and you hear Dylan singing, you think, oh, no.
Yeah. he was a good egg as well. There's the all of the clip that comes up when Sinead O'Connor was going through stuff in America, and he was comparing
stage
charity performance, she was
booed. She was getting a right barricade.
And he came
on
and
his arm around her
and gave her a hug, didn't he? Yeah. And said, no, we're not having that.
Yeah.
No, great bloke. great musician and great actor,
yeah.
I think.
So a sad loss there.
Yes.
Yeah. Trailer trash.
Trailer trash.
This could really be.
Now
literally trailer trash.
We've been trying to convince Sheldon that this looks like a good prospect, but you can tell why you might not think it's a good prospect.
Is this what I think it is?
Yeah. We mentioned this, didn't we? Because it was at TIFF.
And we didn't have any. I don't think we even had an image.
There was nothing. But the trailer has come out this week for A Better Man.
Mm-hmm.
The biopic of Mr. Robbie Williams, directed by the chap who directed Greatest Showman, which I loathe, but lots of people love.
I've never seen it.
So Robbie Williams basically played by a monkey.
A chimpanzee. Yeah. A CGI chimpanzee.
Yeah. Is it Andy Serkis?
It's not.
It's not.
And unusually.
He should sue, shouldn't he?
He'll probably have words.
Yes.
Or sort of monkey grunts. I don't know. Yeah, but it looks fun. I like the closing bit, which we can't quote on air. But it's basically... Yeah. It just looks like a young... I'm going to be famous. Shut up, you stupid person. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Is it before the watershed?
It's
we're just not allowed to swear or we get fined.
Well, do we? I'll wait for that to come.
Some of us slip up now and again, don't we, Denise? Anyway.
It wasn't me.
I know this show is getting to be, it's almost like a serial now. You have to have heard several shows back to get some of the jokes we're making. But we appreciate having a loyal, if rather small, audience.
Small but compact and lovely.
Yes.
Hang on.
Oh, do you know what?
Introduce your music,
Cheryl. Oh, right, yeah. Okay. So, the first track had to be a tribute track for Kris Kristofferson. And even though this is a song that he gave away, and several other people did, I still prefer his version of it. And it's Me and Bobby McGee. And it has actually got a film-related background, something I didn't know about until recently. He got inspired to write it after seeing Fellini's La Strada, and the final scene on the beach triggered him to write this song, Me and Bobby McGee. So there you go.
Well, I could say, for once, this selection isn't as tenuous as yours used to be. I can pull this one in.
Shelley, you are my inspiration when it comes to a playlist.
I decided not to go tenuous.
Something the show rarely has, and that's context. Now, hang on, so I've got to pull all of these levers down here.
If it sounds country, man, that's what it is. It's a country song. Yeah, okay. Well, 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Busted flat in Baton Rouge and heading for the trains. Feeling nearly faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained. Took us all away to New Orleans. I took my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana and was blowing sad while Bobby sang the blues. With them windshield wipers slapping time and Bobby clapping hands, we finally sang a velvet song that driver knew. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing ain't worth nothing, but it's free. Feeling good was easy, Lord, when Bobby sang the blues. Feeling good was good enough for me. Good enough for me and Bobby McGee. From the coal mines of Kentucky to the California sun, Bobby shared the secrets of my soul. standing right beside me, Lord, to everything I'd done. Every night she kept me from the cold. Then somewhere near Selena's, Lord, I let her slip away. Looking for the home I hope she'll find. And I'd trade all my tomorrows for a single yesterday. Holding Bobby's body next to mine. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing left is all she left for me. Feeling good was easy, Lord, when Bobby sang the blues. Buddy, that was good enough for me. Good enough for me and Bobby McGee. Da 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 me and Bobby McGee. La da 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 da, la da da da, me and Bobby McGee. La da 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 da, la da 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 da, la da da da, me and Bobby McGee.
Chris Christopherson there with me and Bobby McGee. Welcome back to the film show, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. And we are pleased to welcome today Dr. Sheldon Hall, my former colleague, friend, retiree.
and my former lecturer. Former colleague.
Yeah. It's all gets
retiree.
Former lecturer.
Denise, you want to...
Well, I'm a former student of all of these three, and I'm not at all intimidated sat in the corner with my laptop. I haven't done my reading. Dr. Sheldon Hall.
Good morning. So, Sheldon's here to talk about his brand new book, The Wonderful Covered... I love the cover. Armchair Cinema.
Yes. Armchair Cinema, A History of Feature Films on British Television, 1929 to 1981, to give it its full title.
Yes.
And those dates. Why those dates?
Yeah, it's. I can imagine that's a bit puzzling, because officially British Television didn't actually start until 1936, so it might seem a bit premature. So it covers a lot of experiments before BBC broadcasting actually started. Film was involved in a lot of the experimental stages of BED television and other television services from 1929 onwards in Britain. And it stops at 1981 for several reasons. One is that it's the year before the start of Channel 4, and I thought that opened up a whole new set of subjects. It's the year before... cable and satellite really took off. It's around the time that VHS took off and Betamax, for that matter. And there will be a sequel. So it's the first half of a story that will be followed up with a further volume at some point. And I hope it won't take me as long to write the sequel as it did to write the first one.
So is that going to cover the same time period then?
No, it will pick up exactly where this one left off. So start at... end of 81, beginning of 82, and come up to the present, I hope. So the trouble with that later period is that it's so much more sprawling and diverse than the early period. The convenient thing about the period I'm looking at in this book is that there are really only three channels, if you think of it in terms of BBC One, BBC Two and ITV, although, as we know, there are lots of local ITV stations. And there was also a cable TV service, short-lived cable TV service called Pay TV from 1966 to 68. And there were two parts of the country where cable covered in that early period. One was London and the other one was in Sheffield. And it's a story that most people don't know about.
No, I didn't know. I read your introduction, yeah. Mm.
I hope Hidden History of Sheffield covered in a part of the book.
I mean, for me, it's fascinating because I haven't read the book yet, but I was sort of around during the writing
you,
of it.
You were around for a lot of the writing. It took, from beginning to end, about 13 years.
Yeah.
From getting the idea and starting to research it in 2011.
Yeah.
And then intermittent periods of writing ever since. So, yes, you will all have heard me rabbiting on about it.
I mean, what I love about it is that it takes me back to being a kid.
Yes.
And aside from the odd occasions where my mum and dad used to take us to the cinema to see a new release, the only way we got to see a film was on the TV.
Pre-video.
In whatever form, whether it was pan and scanned or edited or whatever. And I distinctly remember my dad used to make me stay up late at night to watch a film that he'd seen many years before.
Yep.
And he'd be saying, you have to stay up and watch this because you're never going to get to see it otherwise. Mm. So I'd be, Dad, I've got school in the morning. I don't care. You're staying up to watch this film. So that, for me, it brings back those kind
of
memories.
And often you had to take advantage of those opportunities because the film might not come around again, or it might not come around for 2 years or 3 years, if it ever came around again at all. And having no opportunity to record it, if you couldn't afford the professional standard video recording machines that were around at that time, you had to take your chances where you could. So staying up late or skiving off school or whatever was the only way of seeing those movies.
There's an interesting, you mention as part of the introduction, the attitudes towards film by the broadcasters is very sort of standoffish, as if it's just a filler and they don't really appreciate it or don't see it as the right art form for television.
The people who were involved in acquiring and scheduling films really cared, and there was a huge knowledge base, not just at the BBC, but particularly there, but also at least some of the ITV stations. But the broader, you know, the hierarchy of television, the powers of television, were not particularly interested in films because they weren't made for television. They were acquired from outside, and so films on television are not television, and they're not cinema either.
And there is a point to that, isn't there? Because, like, now you think of a home cinema system, it's a massive screen, but the screens then were very small. And you mentioned as well pan and scanning, and the film isn't the same on the TV.
Yes, people will remember all cinemas go films pretty much were panned and scanned on television until relatively recently, until the late 1980s, I think, really. And so you were always seeing a compromised version of any film made after 1953. You were seeing maybe half the picture. And we took it for granted that that's what was going to happen because it wasn't cinema, it was television. But yes, it was partly because if you letterbox a film on a 22-inch screen, you've got a tiny picture and it looks odd to most people.
I used to show... Well, for one thing, if they did show a film in CinemaScope, they'd get loads of complaints from viewers. I'm missing half the film. No, you're missing half the film anyway. But I used to show students this example of how a film went out, panned and scanned. It was from Frank Sinatra, a cop thriller called The Detective.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's him and Ralph Meeker having a discussion in this room. It's all one shot. Mm-hmm. And Sinatra's on one side of the screen. Ralph Meeker's on the other. And there's an empty chair in the middle of the screen. And I showed the scene how it would go. I had a DVD of it. So I said, right, that's it. Well, let's see how it went out. And we had a record from when it had gone out on BBC or ITV. And that scene was just the chair with two disembodied voices.
You'd sometimes see conversations between two noses at the side of the screen and a blank area in between. Yeah, and often, you know, sometimes these were pre-scanned. So the BBC used to take a lot of care with doing this, and it would be computerised. I learned this from a technician, that they would plan all of the camera moves for the panning and scanning and encode it in a kind of primitive computer form. Sometimes at ITV stations, they would do it on the hoof, and they would try and keep up with it as it was being transmitted.
Yeah.
And clearly the results were often unsatisfactory. Or they wouldn't have someone who was skilled at that kind of technical work to prepare it.
Because when you think about that, the whole structure of the film is completely ruined, because you would have a scene with two people talking, and they're both
on screen.
Yep.
And instead, it would become a load of edits of just, you know, medium close-up to medium close-up to medium close-up. And it's completely destroying the logic of the of the film.
There was an example
it?
Of this on television just the other night. So BBC Four showed one of those talking pictures episodes, clips from interview programmes of the past, and Paul Newman was featured, and there was a clip from, I guess it was Parkinson or film 82 or whatever it was, and within that clip there was a clip from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and because it was from an older programme, it was a pan and scan clip rather than a letterboxed one. And it was the scene where Butch and Sundance jump over the cliff.
Of course, yeah.
And there were these very kind of rigid electronic camera moves. And the panner and scanner had to favour one or the other actor. The whole point of that scene is that they're both in shot at the same time.
Yeah,
so you see their reactions. And it favoured Robert Redford.
Right.
His reactions. And so a lot of the dialogue that was being spoken by Newman was off screen, and the emphasis was all being put on Redford instead of the interaction between the two of them, the byplay, which is the point of the film.
It's weird, isn't it? Because I was the first time I ever saw The Wild Bunch was on TV, in obviously this absolutely butchered version, but it was so good anyway that it stayed with me.
Yes.
But it wasn't until I saw it for properly on a cinema screen, and I thought, good grief, what did I miss the first time round?
That butchered version is discussed in the book, so there's a chapter on editing and where I use The Wild Bunch as an example. And for its second transmission, they showed a version for the first transmission. It was shortened, and then it was censored again. So it was an incomplete version, which was then recut by ITV. Second time, they acquired a longer print, and they made a smaller number of edits in the violent scenes. And this is a defence of television. It was actually a longer version that then was released in British cinemas.
Okay.
So it's often misremembered that the version that was first shown in the UK was the complete director's cut.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It was shortened by 5 or 10 minutes. And before the director's cut was re-released in 1995, I think it was, there was an extended version of the film shown on television, first on ITV, then on the BBC, which included a lot of those scenes that were supposedly seen for the first time when the director's cut came out. And so television does have a role to play, certainly did have a role to play, in providing an opportunity to see often extended versions of films.
Yeah.
Another good example of a Western that was seen in a much more complete version on television than was ever seen in British cinemas is Once Upon a Time in the West.
I was just going to say.
Which was cut by, when it was first released, cut by 20 minutes. And the first time the full-length version was shown in the UK was on ITV in 1978, Bank Holiday Monday.
Yeah.
Interrupted by adverts, panned and scanned, but full length, at least, you know, in terms of running time.
That will have been when I first saw it.
Yeah. And it was only later that it became possible to see that in cinemas.
Yeah.
So television does have... It's very easy to remember all the flaws of television, the limitations of television, but there are strengths in films on television too. It discovered films that weren't ever released in cinemas.
Yeah. And also the mere fact that we probably wouldn't be as obsessed with films as we
absolutely.
if we hadn't been able to seek out these things.
It was our film
TV.
School before we went
absolutely,
to university.
Yeah.
And the thing I've always said about it is I think we, of a certain age, not including you here, Denise, as you're far too young to remember.
Size in the
but
corner.
We would watch any film that was on and
absolutely.
You would pray that the cricket would get rained off or racing would be cancelled.
Of course,
they'd put a film on.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't matter if it was a Bette Davis, weepy, a Western, a thriller,
everything.
Whatever. You'd sit and watch
You'd
it.
You'd watch it.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons that I got into film.
Weirdly,
watched.
We watched a.
I have
a
very
wide
very
range of
vivid
film.
Memory
exactly.
of first seeing Bringing Up Baby on BBC Two on a Saturday morning, and my mum coming into the living room going, "What are you watching this old black and white stuff for?" And I was like, "Mum, it's brilliant. Have you seen this?"
Yep.
No, I've never heard of it. And it just got me into those older films.
And it was because they were just coming at you with no kind of, seemingly with no order, that you saw this kind of random selection of films that, had you been choosing from a menu of multiple choices,
never
you
would have
probably
picked
never have picked them.
No.
But because there are only three channels or four channels, and you didn't have much choice, and you didn't have a machine which with your own collection of films. You just watched whatever came along.
Yeah.
And so you saw a huge variety of films that, for me, just kind of broadened my horizons.
Yeah. I mean, often be that the only other thing on was the Horse of the Year show.
Yes. Oh, when Horse of the Year replaced the Monday film, I was so annoyed. I felt cheated.
Harvey Smith for 2 hours, or, you know.
I'll watch a Western. It was like so excited when Christmas was coming and you'd get the Radio Times with all the listings. And me and my dad would sit there just going through and ticking everything that we wanted
and
to watch.
And advanced trailers on air. I mean, how often do you see films trailered on television?
That's never now, almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then there is a change, isn't there, where all of a sudden the films on TV do become the big attraction. I mean, I suppose the thing I remember most with the got the most publicity is when the Bond films started to be shown. Yep. And the huge amount of money that had been paid by ITV to screen the very early Bond films. And then they became what all the channels would tell you, this is what's going to be on at Christmas.
And huge ratings. I mean, you know, getting FA Cup ratings, Royal Wedding ratings for premieres of the Bond films and other big films. War films always did very well.
Yeah, because, of course, again, this is before video, even, where you could watch it.
Yep. Well, no catch-up services and consolidated like ratings. No, it was all live on the night.
Yeah, be sitting there watching it. Mm. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yes. And reading through your book, there's a couple of things that, and I suppose we've all got a memory or something from watching films on television. My dad used to hate watching films on ITV because of the adverts. But the thing that used to really send him over the edge was when ITV had put a film on at 9 o'clock, and then they'd have the news at 10 on for like 30, 35 minutes, and he would refuse to watch anything that was going out on. And you think, good God, what? That's just mental, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, but it's the watershed thing as well, isn't it? Because the 9 o'clock watershed, you couldn't show certain films.
But ITV would not move the news at 10. Yeah. So that was it. You know, that was a line in the sand, wasn't it? And you couldn't do anything about it. I mean, well, if you're going to watch a film.
I mean, officially, the Independent Broadcasting Authority, the IBA, which regulated ITV, disapproved of that. So it had in its internal rules a set of prohibitions, and one of them was to discourage the straddling of films across the news. But it happened all the time because there were so few opportunities of actually showing films at full length, uninterrupted on ITV, partly because it was a set of regional franchises and they had to come together at certain points, including the news at 10. And if a film was going to be shown midweek in a peak time slot, if it was post watershed material, it had to start at 9 o'clock or later. If it started at 10:30, you lose a very substantial part of the audience.
Yeah.
And so if they wanted to get a decent-sized audience, they had little choice but to split it across across the news. A compromise.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Oh, we could talk for hours on
we
this.
We could, I know.
We'll have to have you back.
Sure.
Well, you're going to bury yourself away and do the second book.
not right away, but yes.
I'm interested in the... obviously, I remember the post-1981 era a lot better.
Bless.
But, yeah. But it is a fascinating subject and area. And they don't get telly like they used to.
No, not in our day. We didn't need it then. Don't need it now.
When I was telling people about writing this book, and I had plenty of opportunities over the years to do it.
Don't we know it?
I'd say it was very actually difficult explaining what it was about, because I'd say I'm writing this book about films and television. You said, what, films made for television? No. Cinema films shown on television. And then there'd be a kind of pause where people said, why?
Yes.
What's the point of that then? And then this invariably happened. They'd start to remember their own childhood experiences of watching films with
the
family.
We all did it to you just now.
And indeed. And often they would connect with family reminiscences, watching films with your father, your dad, not liking films on television.
My mum going, what the hell?
On ITV.
And your mum coming in and objecting. you always have these kind of home-related memories, which are often to do with family occasions and family relationships. So television becomes part of that sort of domestic environment in a way that going out to the cinema doesn't. Obviously, going out to the cinema has its own set of reminiscences and connections. But seeing films in a domestic environment gives you a particularly intimate sort of engagement with cinema, because it's bound up with other aspects of family
and
life.
And that form of television itself has disappeared now.
Sure,
because
yes.
we're all watching different films and different programmes at different times and different
And different
places.
Devices
yes.
as well.
Yeah.
So people, you know,
yeah.
people sitting
yeah.
with their phones or their laptops in different rooms watching different things. And, of course, not watching broadcast television at all, because that's something that only oldies like we do.
Yeah.
yeah.
And you know, young people that I used to teach, we all used to teach.
I used to sit alongside
yes.
them.
Yes, yes. they don't watch broadcast television at all. They
no.
watch films online or some other way than we did when we were growing up.
I'm sadly going to have to draw this conversation to a close, but I think we may well have to come back to it soon.
Yeah.
Because I think there's so much more to talk about.
Mm. Can we just say, while I'm here,
shortly,
I will have an opportunity to talk about it at greater length on the 18th of October, when I'm doing a talk for Off the Shelf Literary Festival, 6:30 on Friday, 18th of October, in the Void Theatre in Sheffield Hallam University, which we all remember so fondly, followed by a screening of a film called The Heartbreak Kid, is showing in a 35mm print, which is an ex-television print. It used to be the BBC's print. And you know, hard as it is to believe, television actually had physical copies of films on film. And we'll be showing a very rare print of The Heartbreak Kid, Elaine May's film from 1972, starring Charles Grodin, and Sybil Shepherd. Possibly the only 35mm print of that film in the world.
I'm glad I've got my ticket already then.
Entry is completely free. Book online and come see the film and hear me talk about the book subject.
Great
Unmissable.
Stuff. Yeah. Okay, so to link in, because Martin always used to tell me off for being too tenuous with my playlist.
Not anymore, Shel. Not anymore.
So what I thought was, because Sheldon was going to be on talking about his book, and we've all just proved this kind of reminiscence and nostalgia.
All our yesterdays.
Yeah. So I thought, well, okay, to link it with that, I've picked three tracks as we go towards the end of the show. Which reminded me particularly not only of the first time I saw these films on TV, but also kind of gave me my love of film music. That was the thing that of each of these three things I ended up getting very quickly to be able to listen to again. Didn't get to watch them again that often until much later. But so this is the first film that made me cry. It still makes me cry now. I think I was 5 years old the first time I saw it. And it's the main theme from Shane.
Terrific.
Thank you.
Okay. Over to you, Denise. Gone.
Okay, you're listening to Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We're going to have to do very quick reviews now because we've run over time. I'm not going at that pace the whole time, though. Are you going to start with your review of the big release of the week?
Big release of the week, yeah. Joker Folie à Deux. The sequel to the multi-award winning Joker from about 5 years ago.
Yes,
brings back Joaquin Phoenix as Arthur Fleck,
yeah.
Joker, and throws into the mix a Lady Gaga.
Lady
Gaga as a sort of like Harley Quinn-like figure. Now, to say this film is dividing audiences is something of an understatement.
I mean, it's mostly dividing them into the no camp, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's widely hated, it seems, online at the moment. It's completely different to the first film. It's pretty much a combination of a prison movie, a courtroom drama, all wrapped into a Hollywood musical. And
fair. Yeah.
I mean, it delivers on all of those. And yes, it's not going down well with people who thought they were going to get a sort of superhero-ish film. So, much to Denise's surprise, I really, really liked it. Even though it's overlong and there is just not enough Lady Gaga in it for me. Mm-hmm. She's the person you're interested in and you don't really find out that much more about Arthur. Whether or not there's a third one they can make out of it, I'm not sure, and I'll leave it there.
Well, much to my surprise, I really liked it too.
Yeah.
But it did start off with a Nick Cave song.
Oh,
doesn't
every film.
And I was like, oh, I'm in here. Yeah. And also I'd seen Megalopolis the same week and everything made sense in this film. Nothing made sense in Megalopolis. So I was like, by comparison, great.
Sheldon, you're here. Megalopolis, very briefly.
Yes. bit of a mess. One of those films that reminds you why it's a good idea to have something like the studio system to look over a director's shoulder and suggest, you know, edits and revisions. Someone who is completely in charge of a project is not going to have the useful feedback of collaboration. And I think that's the problem with Megalopolis. It's too much inside.
You could just stop it. It's too much.
But it needed an objective eye, didn't it?
It needed enough.
Absolutely.
Can you
please tell us what's going on in this scene? Yeah.
But yeah, I love this film. Joker, I really enjoyed it as well. Yeah.
I think in 10 years' time, it's going to be looked upon as one of the great films of this decade, let's say.
I mean, it's pretty bleak.
Oh, it's very bleak,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty grimy and bleak.
Can I ask a question? Mm. Is Batman in it?
No.
No, in the Joker... Did you see The Joker?
I did.
So at the end of The Joker, there's the Bruce Wayne meeting and it's not the Joker, is it? And he's not even relevant in this film.
They jettison all that stuff about the Wayne family.
And it's the era of Bruce Wayne's childhood as well, isn't it?
That must be an opportunity for a sequel, a third one.
Well,
I can't say too much about it because the end of the film.
Okay.
But no.
Let's face it. Yeah. However, maybe its box office returns may more be the reason as to whether or not they go through another one, and they might not be as sparkling.
It carries on the premise that the actual murderer of Bruce Wayne's family was a copycat killer, I think, in fairness, this film doesn't.
But it's way, way in the background, isn't it? This. Yeah. But when Lady Gaga sings Close to You, and he's got the money shot.
Yeah.
That red lipstick
on the thing. It's...
Which is in the trailer as well.
Yeah, it's in the trailer, but I cried at that bit. Mm. That got me that bit.
Well, a surprising rate then.
Oh, I'm going to give it a rate, really glad that all these people don't like it.
Yeah. And it's not just the weird people on Twitter, it's critics as well. They've all said it's flabby and all that.
Yeah. No. And, you know, it's not perfect, but the non-perfect films are always
We don't
the
need
most
perfect, do we? I'm going to have to do a very, very quick review because we're very behind, but I'm going to give a quick mention to The Teacher, which is Farah Nabulsi's debut feature film. She's a British-Palestinian director. She's written the film, shot it on location in 2022. It's a very, it's kind of a melodramatic, sad film. It centres around a Palestinian school teacher who is played by, oh my gosh, I've forgotten the chap's name. It's gone. Mahoud Bakri, who plays a really sort of a father figure to two young boys who are in his school. Imogen Poots appears as a sort of, well, termed one of the kids as Miss United Nations. She's a white woman from London who is volunteering at the school. It's a lovely, it's a good film. It has its flaws, a bit like Joker too. The best part of it is the teacher and young boy's relationship, but it's the compromises that they make and the situation that they're in. I'm going to give it a quick rate. Excellent. I can't go into the review too much because we've got too much else to do.
What's your music?
Oh, music, sorry, crikey. So to go back to the same theme, Armchair Cinema, this was another soundtrack, as well as the film, that had a huge impact on me when the first time I saw it when I was a kid. And this is the opening theme for The Magnificent Seven by Elmer Bernstein. Seven. Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, the end of the film show. I think what's happening now, talking about,
you said that's like
on
the end of Total
the
Film.
The end of Total Film! Ding, get the bell back out again. So just a few bits of what's on before we have to wind up with a final piece of music.
Well, the big new release, Time Stalker.
Yes. Alice
about
Lowe's
the
new
trailer.
Film.
Trailer for that the other day.
Yeah, it looks good, doesn't it?
I'm going to go and see it on Monday at the showroom, but it's released on Friday the 11th.
Ah, mm-hmm. Knocked it back a bit. Yeah, it looks good. Looks good.
Like Alice Lowe.
Yeah. Mm.
In fact, we interviewed her once, didn't we?
Friend of the show, as Martin likes to
say. Friend of the show. There's a few of them out there. There's a few of them out there. Without all the celebrity interchanges we have, you know, in our private lives, which I've kept mine back from this week.
You've done well this week.
I know, I've been champion at the bit. Yeah.
Don't we know it?
There's another version of Salem's Lot coming out.
How do we feel about that?
I don't know. I mean, back, holy man, back, Shaman, back.
I mean, you can't really top the miniseries with David Soul and James Mason.
What would you give for this
James
boy's
Mason?
And come on, Reginalda. You can't top Reginald.
No. The only thing this has got for it, Bill Camp is in it.
It's Bill Camp.
And I'm going to start my very own Bill Camp watch from now on. If you see anything during the week and Bill Camp's in it, note it.
We'll start a new WhatsApp group for that.
Yes.
London Film Festival on Tour screenings start this week. So yep. Blitz is on Wednesday. I'm going to go and catch that. Conclave on Friday. Real Pain on Sunday. There's also a one-off screening of Harder Than Rock, which is about Cimarron's, the band, reggae band.
Oh, it's a documentary. Right, Cimarron's, yes.
Yeah. That's on Tuesday at the Light. I'm interested that we mentioned Maggie Smith last week, sad passing, but they're re-releasing Nothing Like a Dame on iPlayer. You know the Roger Michell documentary with Eileen Atkins, her, and Dame Judy. And Dame Joan Plowright. And it just looked, lots of clips were surfacing of that this week.
Yeah.
And they're wisely re-showing that. Young Frankenstein, 50th anniversary, gets a couple of screenings at the Light. That's on Tuesday and Thursday. It looks, I've never seen it. And I've never seen it? No. No, I watched Spaceballs the other week and I'm like, oh, I'll get to watch that at the cinema. This is going to be amazing.
I rewatched The Producers last weekend and I nearly died from laughing, even though I've seen it numerous times. There's some great bits in Young Frankenstein.
Terry Garr's lovely in it.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've seen clips. And Marty Feldman.
Some of the Marty Feldman lines are priceless. Yeah.
So that's my looking
what
forward to that.
What he would have become if he had lived, Marty Feldman. Yeah. He was someone there. He was just on that cusp of becoming huge, wasn't he?
Part of our childhood on TV, Marty Feldman.
Now, I can remember crying with laughter at that when it was on. It was so stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, where are we now?
Well, that's plenty to be getting on with, I think.
Oh, my God, look at this. Well, we're going to say our goodbyes. Denise, do you want
to Well, I'm some? So... exciting for me to have both Shelley and Sheldon in today and looking at my three lecturers.
All right, leave it.
Well, you're here all week, every week, not buying me coffee and bullying me in the corner.
Well, it's been fun to be back.
And thank you for having me.
Let's hope you come back.
Well, I will do my best.
We've had, you know, we have loads of emails.
Don't look at me in that tone of voice.
And Sheldon, please think there's an open invitation for whenever you want to come along or just do some reviews or talk about a topic or your latest book. As we said, we've got lots more to talk about films on television. I won't be here next week.
I will. It's going to be wall to wall. Judy Garland, Bob Streisand.
To wind Martin up.
I won't be listening.
No, I'll be here next week, either with someone else or on my own.
Right. Well, whatever you do next week, enjoy your films.
Enjoy your films.